That's because why I kept
bourbon.
All right, I kept plying you all with ale.
Right.
The cause of and the solution to all your bad sessions.
Right.
Alcohol.
Live from the Mundangerous Bunker beneath the Guggenheim in New York City, I'm your host Shane.
And I'm your host Ishan.
And welcome to episode 15 of Total Party Thrill, a podcast for game masters and players where we discuss our campaigns in order to inspire yours.
In this episode, we're talking about how to get your game back on track after a disappointing session.
It happens to everyone at least once, right?
Yeah, she said it's totally normal.
Okay, good. It happens to a lot of guys?
No.
Just me?
Us. Also, the Morning Glory campaign attends a meeting of minds, and we're discussing our level 3 pregens for a catacon in the Character Creation Forge.
So speaking of a catacon, our friends over at the RPG Academy recently hosted a live broadcast, a GM's panel, and somebody asked them about why the Ranger sucks, and they referred their listeners over to us. So let's kind of expound on why the 5e Ranger is not so great.
We have to do this again. Someone doesn't know.
Well, we haven't gone through in detail, so let's kind of just cover it from top to bottom.
Oh, it's going to be so painful. Okay, yeah, let's do this.
All right, so what's your first complaint about the Ranger?
My first complaint?
Yes.
It's called the Ranger, and it sucks. Rangers are awesome,
well,
and this sucks. Right? Okay, so I'm not going to take the first one because this is the one that's your big complaint. But like, I hate that it's best at exploration. You got three pillars in this game: exploration, social, and combat. And the Ranger's pretty bad at combat, or at least it pales in comparison to the other martial classes.
Uh huh.
It's awful at social.
In terms of skills, it's not really just social, right? It's just skills in general. It has one decent skill: survival.
Except that it's easily outclassed by a rogue with expertise, which rogues get at level 1.
Yeah. True.
Yeah. And then, you know, exploration. Oh, looking around in the woods, and a druid with a few spells, better than the Ranger.
Yeah, that's what drives me nuts about the exploration pillar, mm-hmm. is that it's the least satisfying pillar of D&D. D&D isn't a game that's built for heavy exploration. So making it the shining beacon of exploration isn't satisfying because it's a light pillar.
And maybe like even if like exploration is totally your thing, the Ranger should not be, because it's not the best. It's supposed to be its thing.
Yeah. Be a druid instead.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's fair. I don't like the Beastmaster. Period. Because it's weak. Because the beast is stuck in this in-between state. Because it shares your action economy. So either you use your action to tell it to attack, or you attack yourself. So either I'm doing something cool and my beast is standing around doing whatever, or my beast is doing something cool and I'm standing around doing whatever. And by the way, my beast isn't very good.
Yeah, we talked about this last episode. The limiting factors in a game, and action economy is one of the main limiting factors in 5e. And anytime you have a class that has a poor action economy, it's just going to be really bad.
You mean like how every one of the Ranger's combat abilities competes for its bonus action?
Of which you only get one.
Yep. So you can two-weapon fight, or you can use your beast to help you and give you advantage. But you can't do both.
Yeah.
How about Land Stride? Isn't that like one of the coolest Ranger abilities?
Druid did it better.
Druid does it first. The druid gets it two levels earlier. It's not even a ranger ability.
Yeah. I mean, it suffers from the same sort of niche loss that it did in 3.5. You know, say what you will about 4E, but that was a really well-defined ranger that shined as a striker.
Yeah, I mean, the role protection that's kind of core to D&D of if in combat you are a support character, or you are a striker, or you are a defender, you know, those roles from 4E, mm-hmm. it's always been part of D&D, whether it was named or not. The Ranger doesn't have a niche because it's not a striker. It doesn't do nearly enough damage. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have that role protection on the non-combat side either. It's stuck in the middle. It just floats with all these funky mechanics.
Right. So also, lots of mechanics, lots of paperwork. And as our listeners know, that I'm not a fan of anything that requires you to keep a lot of notes at the table, because you're bound to forget them. But mm-hmm. all the Ranger's iconic abilities in 5e are situational.
Oh, yeah.
You know, combat abilities and non-combat abilities.
Yeah, let's talk about hide in plain sight.
Okay, it takes a minute to camouflage yourself.
And you get a plus 10 to your stealth check.
And you can't move.
Or take an action.
Yeah, awesome.
You can be a fly on the wall, literally.
At 10th. No, you can't. A druid can literally be a fly on the wall.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah.
You can figuratively be a fly on the wall. Right. It's a 10th level ability.
Well, fortunately, no one's ever going to get to 10th level in Ranger, because you're going to multi-class out.
I know, yeah. And yeah. Oh, by the way, invisibility, better way to do that.
And level 3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It lasts for an hour and you can move.
So like a fighter, what do? Right? They attack 3 or 4 times. You know, a barbarian, they rage, and it doesn't matter what's going on. That's what they do. But a ranger, well, I don't know. What am I fighting against? Do I have experience with this? Is this my favorite terrain? It's just, you never know if you're going to be able to operate at full capacity.
Yeah, basically.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps the most damning evidence. Wizards is trying to fix them.
Yeah.
Yeah, they admit that they did a bad job. They never admit that they did a bad job.
No, this will be the first class they've ever tried to fix.
Mm-hmm.
In the history of D&D, they've never tried to fix a class after it was published.
In that way, yeah. I mean, Tome of Battle was awesome, but...
Well, yeah, but that was more options.
Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. They've never rewritten a class.
Right.
So, there's your story. They're experimenting with all new mechanics. And we've talked about the new Unearthed Arcana Ranger. We've mm-hmm. talked about the Spellless Ranger that we saw in Unearthed Arcana. I mean, a lot of attention has gone to the Ranger class. It is a problem.
It's because people want it to be good, and there's so much attention because everyone knows it's not good.
I know. And it should be awesome. It is one of the coolest classes, fluff-wise, in D&D.
Right. And, you know, we're not talking as power gamers, right? Like,
no, because it's never been particularly strong.
Yeah, and it doesn't need to be.
No, because it gets cool abilities. When you're outside, you should feel like a total badass. And then in combat, you should hold your own.
Right, but it's not fun to play.
Nope, not at all. Well, at least, it's not fun because it's a ranger. Any class is fun, because D&D is a fun game, but it's not fun because of anything in the rangerness of it.
I don't know, I'd probably be looking at the rogue and going, should have played a rogue.
Yeah, rogue druid could have done this better.
Bard 20.
All right, let's move on to Morning Glory.
All right. So when last we left, I believe Bran had just gotten critted with a Bane arrow.
Yeah, it didn't feel great.
Yeah.
But I landed in a Canith facility.
That's true. All of you had discovered in Metrol.
Right, in the Mornland.
In a trapdoor in the ground.
Correct.
Right.
And this was a sunken tower. Or at least the below ground foundation of a Canith facility, a House Canith of the Artificers.
Yes. So once you were inside, you realized that it was a Canith facility, because you actually used Canith key charms to get in there.
Right. That's how we knew it was a Canith facility.
Right. But yeah, it was a trapdoor in the ground. But when you got in there, it seemed like it was the top level of a tower.
But, you know, just more weirdness of the Mordland.
Yep. And as you explored more, it did seem like you were walking down from the top of a tower.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the first level, right? So the top level, in a way, turned out to be a war room with maps from the very end, the like last few months of the last war. Although Brand, who was from a Thranish Inquisitor, noticed that there was information on these maps in Seer that had information that people in Seer should not have known from behind Thranish lines.
Right.
Yeah, which seemed out of place to him.
Yeah, though I wouldn't understand why until much later.
Correct.
And I believe, did this validate Kallak's concerns about the Day of Mourning? Wasn't this sort of building towards his case against Canith with his justified hatred of them for perpetrating the Day of Mourning?
I mean, pretty much every bit of evidence that you guys uncovered led Kallak to believe that he was... You know, absolutely right.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Not one who lacked for conviction.
Yes.
So once we left the first level, what did we find on the second?
Well, so at this point, you had also determined that you weren't able to leave the tower. So it took
Well, why would we? The Lord of Blades is on the other side. Right. I don't even remember trying.
Well, if you tried. One more level down is when you actually met some people. There were two Canith acolytes who were so happy to see you because they had been trapped in there for 4 years.
Yeah, they were going a little stir crazy, but they were ultimately relatively friendly.
Yeah, pretty nice.
Pretty happy to explain what was going on as we probably a little roughly interrogated them at first.
A little bit. I mean, you know, you guys are naturally suspicious.
And had an angry paladin with us.
That's true. Who would believe that they were, you know, responsible
for the day and morning.
Exactly. Yeah. And you were at the location of coordinates where you knew something bad had happened.
Exactly.
Yeah. So they were so happy to see you because, like all Caneth facilities, they were provided fresh food and water, but they weren't able to communicate outside the tower since what you calculated was the day of mourning when the tower, they felt it just sort of sink into the ground.
Right.
And then, like, that's it. Everything else was silent.
And then upon interrogating them, we learned that they didn't really know anything of what was going on with the day of mourning.
Yeah, they'd had no contact with the outside world.
Right.
Okay. So on this level, there was basically just the food and water, a few small living quarters, and the two acolytes, and then there were spiral stairs going downstairs, which led to another set of living quarters. There was an extra-dimensional trunk and two shield guardians, one each attuned to one of the acolytes.
And are shield guardians actual published 5e material, or was that homebrew?
No, they're real.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
Yeah, they're in the monster manual.
There you go.
They even say, maybe you want to give this out as treasure.
Oh, interesting. See, I haven't read that far in there because I never get past orcs. Because all my encounters are orcs, reflavored.
I just use Garistros.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and then on the final level, we found the door, right?
Yes. So in order to, the spiral staircase continued, but there was just a door that baffled the acolytes. It was completely locked. There wasn't a way that you found to get through it or to pick the lock, but there was an inscription on the door, which I will say right now to all of you, I basically just stole from a Langston Hughes poem.
And fortunately, none of our group are as well read as you, so went right over our heads.
And it said, to enter this tower, a soul must descend to spend a meditative hour that never ends.
So we pondered that for a bit. Meanwhile, we headed back upstairs to continue interrogating our newfound acolytes.
And as time went on, they seemed to get a little more agitated.
Uh-huh.
Like they wanted to get out of there.
Right.
You know, come on, just like free us, get us out of here. We've been waiting for so long. You're the rescue party, right?
Right. And we weren't.
Not at all.
Yeah.
And of course, you guys were getting a little agitated too, because, you know, help us get through this door. How do we do this? Right. There was a puzzle that you needed to figure out.
Yeah. And you know what the answer to that puzzle was?
What was the answer to that puzzle?
Killing the acolytes.
Oh yeah. I guess that's usually the answer to my puzzles.
Yeah.
So who struck the first blow?
I don't remember how it came to blows, but...
Oh, now I recall. Actually. They got really agitated, right? And then Bastion, the Warforged monk, went like...
Into the unopened bedroom, right?
Yes.
That was it.
And then you guys saw the body.
And they decided to attack us when we saw the body.
Yes. That was actually a pretty good fight because they were really well armed with lots of counter spells, as were you.
Right. It was a literally like... counting how many reactions we have as a party to counterspell them. Because I think our bard, our sorcerer, and our warlock all had counterspell. Yeah.
Yep. That was pretty crazy. Oh, and then there was the invisible stalker that was on the ceiling and just sort of waiting, plus the animated rug.
I forgot about the rug.
Yeah. You guys took it out pretty quickly, but yeah, it was there. So it was this big melee in this very small contained area. The map was very tiny.
Right.
Were you the one who hid under the desk? While the invisible stalker kept punching you in the head?
I did, yes.
Right.
Because I was very low on health, and I was just trying to counterspell. And so I was trying to play the control game while getting beat up mercilessly.
Yeah, that worked really well.
Yeah, I mean, I lived.
You guys did a pretty good job, and then there were a few fireballs flying around.
That actually knocked me out, I think, if I recall. Right. I think I got sacrificed for a fireball that probably killed a couple of them.
I believe it finally took out the stalker, yes. Right. And then... it would have taken out one of the acolytes, except then its head exploded.
Oh, right. Because they weren't acolytes.
They were intellect of ours. Right. Which then exploded onto Bastion's face and then drained his intellect. And he, being not particularly bright, immediately dropped to the ground, drained of intelligence.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. In a stupor.
Super smart.
Right. But then you were able to take out the... once the intellect of our was outside the body, you were able to kill it pretty easily, and then you knew what the other one was, and you were able to take it out as well.
Right.
Yeah.
And then we did some searching in this trigger of a bedroom, found some logs, some diaries.
Ah, yes.
And we learned what had really happened inside the Kenneth facility.
There were three acolytes on the day of mourning inside the Kenneth facility who were locked inside.
And by the time we got there, there were two and a half acolytes left, I think.
Right. They were trying to figure out ways to escape, right? They were locked in there for years. Mm-hmm. So they started opening portals to different places.
Yep.
The plane of air, and hey, you know, there's an
invisible stalker.
Invisible stalker, thank you. Which they kept under control pretty well. And then eventually they got desperate and they opened up a portal to Zoriat, and out popped two intellect devourers. Two of their brains.
When you mess with aberrations,
yep,
that's what you get.
Aberrations mess with you.
Yep.
And then, you know, once they were intellect devourers, they started eating the third acolyte.
Right.
And then waited for you guys. I mean, they didn't know you were showing up, but
waited for somebody.
They were certainly getting hungry for brains.
Right.
Yeah.
And
you got a shield guardian out of it. One of them got irreparably damaged. Well, the amulet got irreparably damaged, but right. There was another one, and I gave you a shield guardian.
Yeah, and at that point, Emery, the bard, finally had some protection.
Right, because she was like, my AC is 16.
Yeah, and she never improved that, but she did have extra HP from the shield guardian.
That's right.
So,
but then you still had to deal with this door.
Yeah, so what was that inscription again?
Yes. To enter this tower, a soul must descend to spend a meditative hour that never ends.
And so, the party kills Bastion. Goodbye, monk. Find out what happened next week.
Speaking of recovering from a lackluster session. No, that one was good.
That was a great session. There was no recovery needed.
It's true. Thank you. I appreciate it.
But actually, talking a little bit more from our home game, recently had a pretty bad session myself.
I thought it was fine.
All right, fine enough. All right. So I wanted to talk about this subject because I felt like I blew it the last session that I ran. We've all had bad sessions for sure. So we want to talk about how do you recover from that. So what happened for us, as we've talked about on the show, we've been playing Dark Heresy and we were coming to the end of a chapter in that campaign, and we had planned to switch to try Feng Shui 2, which we've also talked about on the show. And obviously I've been really excited about because I'm running that game and we're playing Pirates.
I've been excited as well. Although the Dark Heresy game ended really well.
Oh, it was great. It was a awesome climactic battle against a demon host. Greater
demon, yeah.
Yeah, and then we
not a demon host.
Oh, an actual demon.
Yeah.
Oh, right. And then we saved a planet from a dark ritual.
Point.
Yeah. You sacrifice yourself to awesome. Save the party. I mean, it was great. I mean, it was a fantastic ending. Took about 2 hours of our normal 4-hour session. So we had planned ahead of time. We'll finish Dark Heresy, and then we'll kick off Feng Shui with quickly describing, developing our characters, and then sort of a quick combat session to kind of get used to the system, right? And we talked about that up front. That was the plan. So my job as the GM was to facilitate character creation, which I think went okay.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, we kind of got through the archetypes and then...
I mean, there's not a lot of character creation in Feng Shui 2.
No, but we did have to create stories and a little bit of motivation and melodramatic hook. So right. I felt like we got through that pretty well. Got four interesting characters out of it. Found a reason for them to be on a merchant ship traveling from Charleston to the Bahamas. And... then very predictably...
It was rum. The answer was rum.
What other reason would there be? But very predictably, right? I mean, very, very cookie-cutter kind of plan for the session. The ship came upon a vessel in distress. It turned out to be pirates.
What?
They boarded the ship, and the party had to fight or flee. Or, you know, you could have joined. Just didn't think it went very well. I thought combat was messy. I thought the dramatic decision of... do you switch ships or do you join the pirates here? You know, it just wasn't very dramatic. Didn't really tie the action together very well. I felt like I didn't do a great job of describing what was going on, and I wasn't even really sure what was going on with the system, which made me disappointed because I've played Feng Shui before and thought it was a great system, and then I completely let it fall flat.
Well, so all the rest of us were playing the system for the first time. So, right. You know, it certainly makes things more complicated, but as we'll see, no matter what the reason is for having a lackluster session, there are certain ways to get out of it.
Right. So that's what happened in my session. What are some other ways that you might have a bad session yourself?
Well, as we're sort of seeing here, right, how can you tell that you had a bad session, right? Maybe one person liked it and other people didn't. But a few possible things, right? Maybe the plot just totally gets out of control. Sometimes that's fine, but sometimes it sort of leaves everyone going, what happened there?
Where are we supposed to go? What are we supposed to do now?
Right. If the party is unsure of their next steps, in general, players should feel like there are too many avenues to pursue and they need to choose, not,
I don't know where to go. Maybe, what do you think?
Right.
If players are confused at the end of a session when they're supposed to be enlightened, there was a big reveal that's supposed to explain everything. All these things are supposed to come together. But then, you know, once the session's over, people are still like, hold on, wait, explain this happened? To me again.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't get this.
Or maybe you just ended with a rough combat encounter. Like, it was either more difficult or less exciting. And I mean, I think that definitely applies for me.
Yeah.
Or what if you end up with a TPK?
Boom, boom, boom.
I mean,
it wasn't a total party thrill.
No, we killed the whole party, and I didn't mean for that to happen.
Right, and it's unintended.
I mean, you should never intend to TPK, but...
get on this railroad. I'm the conductor.
At Roxfall, you die.
Look, it's the second session, and everyone's supposed to die.
Right.
Come on. I have a vision. Okay, so what made your session bad, do you feel?
So, I feel like it didn't have a huge burden for plot because we knew this was kind of a prologue sort of session, right? So, I felt like the setup was fine.
We certainly knew that, like, we weren't in any danger.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit frustrating as a GM. Mm. Another thing is I didn't really have any NPCs developed other than the pirate captain.
Whose name I think was Pirate Captain.
Well, you never asked him his name.
Well, he was busy attacking us with a cutlass.
Yeah, he has a name. You'll learn it. Maybe.
Is it Morty?
Yeah, so there was zero role play other than describing what your character had been doing for a couple days.
I rhymed all the time. See what I did there?
It starts again. But I think the biggest thing for me was that I just didn't run the rules smoothly. And that dragged combat down. The initiative system in Feng Shui is a little bit unique, given that it's structured as sort of an action movie versus the traditional initiative order kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Didn't represent that very well. I felt like you guys were very confused as to what was going on and who is next. Combat wasn't very cinematic, nor was it tactical. So I felt like it just got stuck in the middle. And
we were doing a lot of referencing. Yeah. Right? Like, hold on, how does this work?
Yeah, that's part of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I felt like I had been looking forward to kicking off this campaign, and I could not have kicked it off in a less exciting way.
All right, so enough beating yourself up. Once you've actually determined, I didn't really like that session. I want to fix things. How do you go about doing that?
Well, you could retcon. So maybe we weren't on a boat that time.
That didn't actually happen.
Yeah, you wake up from a dream.
It was illusions, all the wizard.
Right.
Yeah.
It doesn't work for every session, but you know, in some cases, especially if it goes off the rails just at the very end, you can say, okay, look. Screwed this up. Should have handled it differently. Why don't we just kind of walk it back a bit and pretend this happened instead?
Yeah, I have definitely done that in a more sneaky way. I've looked through the rules after the session and been like, okay, maybe I missed something, or what's something that I can play like rules as written instead of as intended? And then at the beginning of the next session go, oh, you know, like I really should have given you a saving throw then. So like, why don't you roll that? With advantage.
Nice.
And you know, because that's not fair. That's not fair of me.
Right.
And then they make in, hey, great. Guess what? It wasn't a TPK. That's my fault, guys. It's my fault. It's the rules. It's not because I'm a bad storyteller. It's the rules.
Right. Or see if there's something missing that you can replace now.
Right. Because maybe it wasn't the entire session that was bad. There's just a piece missing. Maybe there's one piece of information that you forgot to give or that was explained poorly. That's the thing that sort of brings it all together. Oh, right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So again, sort of at the beginning of the next session, maybe they stumble upon that.
And this is one that I suspect you actually used repeatedly in the Morning Glory campaign.
Probably. I don't know what it is though.
Sometimes people just forget, you know, at the end of a session, it's been a long session. You've been drinking. Maybe you don't remember all the details. You know, you remember the large strokes, but you don't catch the details. And you just, hey, if you guys don't remember, maybe it never happened.
Maybe.
I suspect you did that repeatedly. But I can never prove it.
That's because why I kept...
bourbon.
All right, I kept plying you all with ale.
Right. Not a reliable... but you know, I mean, it happens.
Yes, the cause of and the solution to all your bad sessions.
Right.
Alcohol.
No, but I think what we talked about where, especially if you're trying to tie a lot of plot threads together, it's kind of a high stakes moment in a session.
Mm.
a lot of times it falls flat and you can fix it at the beginning of the next session by just sort of filling in the blanks for your players, mm-hmm. right? And I think that's actually something we did a decent amount in Dark Heresy, because there's a lot of proper nouns and a lot of moving pieces to a conspiracy. Right. And so we would kind of walk it back at the beginning of the session. And that was generally where our GM, Jim, would go, okay, so you guys understand now, whether as players you do, or you know, your characters understand, hey, there's a link here. You guys don't have that on your chart yet. Put that in.
Right. And that gives the players an opportunity to go, oh, so that then we would have done this other thing.
Right, so let's go
slightly differently. Right, yeah. And, you know, it just helps everyone do what they wanted anyway, which was be successful and have the story make sense.
Right.
Yeah.
So what do you think is the damage from that feng shui session?
I think, really, it's just that it needed to be more exciting. There needed to be more buy-in from all the players. And so I think if that just happens next session, then the session itself will quickly recede into sort of the history of the campaign.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think a big challenge there is there was no dramatic question in that combat, right? Mm-hmm. I threw in a combat because feng shui is an action movie RPG. You're supposed to have action.
Right, but this was essentially a glorified tavern scene.
Yeah, exactly. It was just kicking the tires on it to get comfortable with rolling different dice than we normally do and comparing to different target numbers, right?
But yeah, I mean, give it 6 weeks and I think we'll be like, oh yeah, and we had that fight on the boat.
Yeah.
Yeah, with the pirate captain.
Maybe.
And then we stole a boat.
I mean, unless I screw up next session, too.
Well, you know, third time's a charm.
You guys totally have a boat now.
We do have a boat.
All right, so what are some options to actually repair your damaged campaign after a bad session?
Well, first off, I highly recommend everyone go back and listen to our improvisation and homebrew episodes, because that'll help a lot.
That's episode
12 and 14. A bit like I said before, a good way to try to fix it is begin the next session with the cliffhanger that you should have ended the previous session on, right? So maybe you're unprepared, right? Often you end a session on, oh, like what will happen now? But if your previous session fell flat, just begin with that cliffhanger.
Yeah, that's a good idea. So mm-hmm. So something like the reinforcements you've been waiting on finally arrive.
Right. If you'd planned properly, they would have arrived at the end. But you didn't actually think of it till, you know, in between sessions. So right. Begin with, hey, reinforcements arrive. Oh, yeah, no, that was always happening. I just didn't get to that. What?
Right. Yeah. Or like that NPC's identity is revealed.
Mm-hmm. It might feel a little awkward in the moment, but it's better for your players to think that that was just bad timing on your part than bad planning and furious retconning over the last week.
Yeah, and I mean, in the scheme of a whole campaign, that cliffhanger isn't going to be any less cliffhangy because they didn't wait a week in between sessions.
One other thing that I sometimes would do, and maybe you guys noticed this, was if I felt I had a bad session, instead of like beginning the next session with the cliffhanger, the intersession email would be so full of detail that I would hope that would distract you before the next session. So I'm going to try to avoid some spoilers, but the first real confrontation that you guys had with Nistrum.
On the airship?
No, the one before that, the observatory.
Oh, okay.
I felt like that session ended in a kind of lackluster way. I didn't really love it. And so that's why in your emails 2 days later, you got all new character sheets and a bunch of notes that said, hey, so are you confused about what just happened? Well, you should be, because here's all the information that I totally didn't have time to compile last time, but was totally written and going to happen. So read up.
I'm already confused. It's working. And I ostensibly was part of that session.
Yeah. Well, when we actually get to that point in the Morning Glory campaign, I'll explain it more thoroughly. And of course, sometimes recovering from a session just means sort of playing it where it lies. Like if an important NPC happened to die and now things are kind of screwed up and the party feels like, oh, we kind of failed. Maybe you need to prep like half a session of a little mini quest for them to find another NPC that'll do a very similar thing. Or will, you know, do something very different, but will still solve the same problem.
How about the least satisfying end of all? The TPK that abruptly ends a campaign.
That really depends on the game you're playing and your table. Because there's some old school players I know who will be like, start over.
That's it. Campaign's done.
Yeah. Or, you know, we'll just all roll new characters and like start from scratch and maybe we'll be fighting the same villain or trying to continue the same quest, but it's just going to be harder now.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people do that these days.
Mm. It's an old Grognard tradition, I think. That
yeah.
I think modern RPGs, or modern players anyway, they like that cohesive narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would expect either you retcon out your TPK somehow, you have a miraculous intervention sort of thing, you have a purgatory type scenario, perhaps.
Yeah, a magical patron, a deity of some sort.
Right, some divine intervention that gives you a challenge to get you back on track, but takes your campaign in a different direction post-death versus trying to build new characters that hopefully end up on the right thread to go fix whatever problem the PCs were originally trying to fix.
Right. And this is something that's sort of baked into the 5e system these days anyway. I remember when we were running the Caves of Chaos playtest, it even said, hey, I mean, there's a bunch of kobolds here.
Right.
So like if your entire party gets wiped, maybe the kobolds don't kill them all. Maybe they like hold some for ransom because they would totally do that.
Yeah.
And that actually did happen, maybe like our third session, so the party would totally have gotten wiped, but instead the crazy warlock had to ransom the others and they lost all their gold. So still a setback, right? But not a TPK and not a loss of the entire continuity of the story.
Sure, sure.
And of course, that's definitely something that you can do that makes sense. And honestly, if it's very difficult to wipe an entire party in 5e.
Well, after a certain point, for sure. Like by level 5, it's tough.
And even at low levels, like, okay, 3 of you are down. Why is the last one of you not running?
Yeah, I mean,
you know, if even one of you gets away, then you can eventually hire more people and then go collect those bodies, you know?
Yeah, I mean, resurrection's still an expensive process.
But as long as one person's alive, then the story can at least continue.
That's true.
Right?
That's true.
Plus, you know, you just bring in like relatives who need to avenge the dead person.
Yeah, weird that like our party was full of twins.
Fraternal.
Yeah.
It's fine. Yeah.
So the other piece, and this is something that I think plagued the feng shui session, is just GM problems. For me, my plan is to go back to basics. I'm going to reread the rule book and make sure I'm understanding the flow of combat better. I'm going to revisit the way that I make notes and plan because, truthfully, I didn't plan that session very well.
You're going to make yourself a cup of tea and repeat affirmations in the mirror. And are you going to make a Tumblr GM problems?
No, but I mean, I am going to develop a mantra that I'll repeat to myself the morning of.
It's probably good.
And like, if it starts to go badly again, I'll ask for a bathroom break and go just tell it to myself 3 times.
Cry a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't make it Beetlejuice.
Another good one is to revisit the source material. If you feel like you've gotten off the theme, pirates kind of have these certain notes that you want to hit in a campaign. So I'm going to go probably watch Pirates of the Caribbean or maybe at least Google some ideas for pirate stories get some more source material.
Yeah.
Do you hear that, Ishan?
Is that me dropping hints through the whole session that nobody's picking up and so it doesn't make any sense?
I'm picking up your hint. It's time for the Character Creation Forge.
Oh, perfect.
But before we do that, let's talk about how our listeners can get in contact with us.
We love hearing from you.
You can tweet at Shane, at Mundangerous, that's M-U-N dangerous.
And you can tweet at Ishan, at Evil Sans Carne, that's malice minus meat.
And you can tweet at the show, at TPTcast. You can also email us, if you can't fit it into 140 characters, at totalpartythrill@gmail.com. And finally, you can find us on the web at www.totalpartythrillcast.com.
So we've got something different for the Forge this week, Shane, right?
Yeah, so this week we are going to share the level 3 pregens that we created for Matt's Akaticon game. Matt sent us an email, said, hey guys, you like to create characters for the Character Creation Forge?
That's true.
Yep. Why don't you build me a couple pregens for the game I'm running at Akaticon? And he sent us basically the background for his game. The Silver Snakes Mercenary Company is hired to escort some delicacies to the wedding of the century across the frozen tundra of the Ice Crown. What could go wrong?
Hopefully everything.
Right. So we set about to build a couple of mercenaries. What did you build?
So we're going to talk a little bit about the development of the idea, which some of you have asked about before, and then we'll go into the build and then the backstories that we created. So I initially misread the email.
Oh, yeah?
I saw escort, and I thought wrong. And then
and then
I went to something else, which was right.
Family show.
I thought that wedding guests were being escorted. So I immediately thought of our bodyguard builds.
Uh-huh.
Right? I was like, oh, level 3? Well, a cleric, I could do warding bond, blah, blah. And I thought that would be a little too complicated for people who haven't played any 5e yet.
And then you reread the email.
No. Then I thought, oh, well, you know, fighter and protection fighting style. That sounds pretty good, right? But I like to play against type. I thought there might be something that was more interesting. And I thought a good bodyguard would be a barbarian for damage reduction. So barb fighter.
And then you read the email.
And then I read the email and said, oh, I don't need fighter for protection fighting style. Well, screw it. Great weapon fighting style.
Nice.
Yeah.
Classic fighter.
I mean, and then the yes, barbarian. Barbarian fight. I should have gone one level rogue and could have been Conan. Although he's probably a terrible escort.
Well, he's not really a barbarian, actually.
In name only.
Right.
Yeah.
He's like a rogue champion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's true.
So one level of rogue, 19 levels of champion.
And in developing the backstory, I had actually watched Justice League Gods and Monsters. And I've always sort of been intrigued by this idea of Darkseid and Highfather trading sons to cement the, well, not the alliance, but like the tepid truce between, you know, Apocalypse and whatever the other planet is. I never remember.
I can't help you out. It's all Greek to me.
That's okay. Well, anyway, so in the comics, what happens is they switch, and then the good guy takes in the son of the bad guy, Orion.
Uh-huh.
Orion's the son. And raises him to be a pretty good person.
Okay.
And so, like, and then he hates his actual father, who's like weird. A terrible person.
Yeah.
You know? So I had this idea of a character who was playing against type, was born a barbarian, but then was swapped in a trade to cement a truce between warring factions, and then was raised basically as like a noble fighter.
Nice.
And so thus was born Urgrim of Martru.
Oh, it sounds like a half-orc.
Yes, yes, indeed. We talked a little bit about this. Half-orc would probably be like the best to go against type and also good for the build. So right, yeah, right. It was great. So in terms of the build, he is a Barbarian 1, Fighter 2. And that was really the only thing I sort of struggled with. Do I go Barbarian 2, Fighter 1? But I decided this was the best mainly because of Action Surge.
Uh-huh.
So he's a half-orc, like I said, and background is Outlander, which gives him some nice survival skills. And, you know, just fits really well with him and gives him also a language, which I decided would be Elvish because I really wanted to play up his noble breeding.
Uh-huh.
And being able to speak Elvish. And also he's got high charisma. High charisma, high strength. It lets him play the diplomat role, which I think will really confuse a lot of people.
Okay.
Especially since he's still quite capable of raging. He doesn't get any feats because he is only level 3 and not human. But let's see. Alignment, lawful good. Skills, I chose athletics. He gets intimidation, perception, persuasion, and survival. And with the half-orc traits of, you know, savage attacks and relentless endurance, he's really difficult to put down. He also deals out a ton of damage with potentially very impressive crits with a great axe. He's got action surge, so he can attack twice. He's got rage twice a day, a second wind. If he ever has to take off his armor, he's got unarmored defense. Basically, he rages, closes into melee, and then attacks twice, and probably kills something in the first round every combat.
Nice.
If necessary, he can switch to a shield. He's got a javelin, throws the javelins. But even outside of combat, because he's got high persuasion, he's a natural born leader. And one thing I actually sort of built into this was charisma 14, so that if this is a character that ever gets played more down the line, he can always multi-class to bard if he wants to go the scald route, or a paladin. I think he's sort of primed for a paladin.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Although I can't help but say this, I think you should take either barbarian or fighter to 5 first and get extra attack before you multi again.
Fair enough.
As for the backstory, Urgrim of Martru was born among the savage tribes on the far side of the Dur River. They had long warred with the scattered towns to the west, and both sides were tired of the bloodshed, though neither would admit it. In a desperate gambit to end the fighting, the Duke of Martru agreed to a trade of firstborns with the warlord of the barbarian clans. Urgrim was the eldest child, then 7 years old, and already an accomplished hunter and warrior. He was sent by his parents to live behind the walls of the capital with the humans of Martru. He took their name and learned their ways, ever conscious that his task was one of diplomacy and honor. And now on the cusp of manhood, he has set out with the blessing of his stepfather to find his way in the world.
Nice. I would play that character.
Yeah, you would. You would play it because it's a good character that will tear things up. And also then parlay.
Right, right.
Do you surrender?
you probably should surrender.
Yeah. Let me explain this to you.
Yeah, you want to surrender. let me flex.
All right. What have you got?
So alongside Urgrim will be Halsey, who is possibly my strangest inspiration yet.
I'm excited to hear this.
Okay, so Halsey is a real-life indie pop singer who recently released an album that has a song on it that I listened to, and when the first time I heard it, I thought, if you took this literally, that would be an awesome D&D character.
Did we get paid for this product placement?
No, and I'm going to read it because I don't want to have to pay more royalties. Still can't afford Daft Punk. So the verse that kind of inspired it: my demons are begging me to open up my mouth. I need them mechanically make the words come out. They fight me, vigorous and angry, watch them pounce, ignite me, licking up the flames they bring about.
So, fiendish warlock?
Does that not sound like a fiendish warlock? Right?
I dig it.
So I basically extrapolated that verse, right, and the chorus of the song. The song is called Hold Me Down. But I extrapolated that out to build a whole character out of it. So Halsey is a level 3 warlock, fiend packed, and also chain packed. Or packed of the chain, fiend warlock, right? So she's level 3, human. Her background is entertainer. So this is kind of a cool thing for 5e where, you know, you'd think she's a singer. Her background is actually as a singer as a character, but she doesn't have to be a bard. That can be in her past.
Nice.
So she has all the performance and that sort of stuff, right? But her whole thing, she has scarred her own vocal cords. She can never sing again.
So mechanically, did you actually take performance?
Yeah, has performance. Also has Pact of the Chain and Voice of the Chainmaster. Oh. So she speaks through her imp familiar.
Nice.
Yeah, so she gets a feat as a alternate human.
This is going to be a great wedding.
I know. She took Lucky. A little bit ironic.
Which you need. Right. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then, you know, for spells, she took the staples of the warlock. So she's got Eldritch Blast, and then she has Armor of Agathys to protect herself. She doesn't want to be hurt again. She has Hellish Rebuke. She has Hex. And then her only second level spell is Enthrall. And so as her background, right, her story, she was approached by a wealthy merchant who became sort of her patron as an artist. Fell in love with him. Turns out he's a devil.
What?
Yeah, I know. It happens to the best of us. So she signed away her soul to become and became a warlock. Was betrayed, obviously.
Is this a record company analogy?
Yeah, right.
His name was BMG.
Right. His name was Elisareth. And then so to get even, and the only way she knows how, first of all, she scarred her own vocal cords, so she can't speak normally anymore, preventing her from ever bringing him any joy from her singing. And like I said, she now communicates through her imp, Cherubale.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice. Okay, now we have to pay royalties.
But that's a good name, right? Because
it is a good name.
It's an imp that came around from her falling in love and being scorned.
Yeah, it was good.
And yeah, so then the only other way she can get even with her devil is to use the powers that he's bound to give her to do things that don't advance his own goals. So she's kind of become this good-ish character, right?
Yeah, what's her alignment?
True neutral.
Good-ish, all right.
Yeah, good-ish, you know. She's not advancing evil plots. She doesn't feel strongly about being good, but she's happy to do good things just to piss off her patron.
Oh, right? Okay.
She's the prototypical woman scorned.
I see. She and Urgrim will get along great.
She gave her soul. She sold her soul. I thought that was a cool way to sort of interpret a song literally.
Plus, she's good artillery.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she has Eldritch Blast.
Yeah.
And all of her spells can be flavored as her bitterness and words causing magical harm. Eldritch Blast is a bit of a stretch. But like Hex, right? It's a taunt. Or Hellish Rebuke is literally rebuking her attacker using the voice of a book imp.
Sultry. Does the book imp get shape change? Can it change into things, I think?
I don't know. I didn't even look. I mean, there was no other option, right? I mean, well, the imp is the only real...
You don't go to the pseudo-dragon?
The pseudo-dragon can't talk. Totally would screw me up.
So whoever gets this character, check out the abilities of the imp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's probably got... I mean...
I can get some poison. Oh, and magic resistance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's a cool character. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to play. And it's just level 3 warlock, right? So...
Yeah, tons of fun. So, whichever two of you get these characters. We hope you enjoy them as much as we enjoyed putting them together.
Yeah, and I think we can put these characters, we'll link them in the show notes.
Yeah.
With the character sheets we built.
Put them online.
Yeah, so that you guys can see them. I don't think Matt will mind.
I think now's the time in the show when we beg for reviews.
Yeah, if you like the show, you don't have to sell your soul. You could just give us a 5-star review on iTunes. And if you do that, we will read it on the air in the next episode.
You can also find us on Stitcher, the Pandora of podcasts.
Yep.
Like us there, and that'll help refine the algorithm so other people can find us as well.
Yeah, or just, you know, share us with your gaming group. Tell some people about the show. We'd love to have a bigger audience so we can interact with you guys more and come up with more great ideas.
Yeah.
So what are we talking about next episode?
Well, we've got our review of the Sword Coast Adventurer's Guide.
And in the Character Creation Forge?
We'll be rebuilding one of our old characters from the Forge with new material from the Sword Coast Adventurer's Guide.
Oh, we're going to rebuild the Swashbuckler.
We're doing the Grappler. Ugh. It's going to be the Grappler.
Okay, it's probably going to be the Bodyguard.
The Grappling Bodyguard.
Got to take him down. Well, that's it for episode 15 of Total Party Thrill. I hope we've lived up to our name, but either way, I'm Shane.
And I'm Ishan. Thanks for listening.